Welcome to the 27th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist living in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete. I started this podcast to show the benefits of eating plant-based, both from a health benefit and environmental aspects, as well as an animal protection and animal rights view. Today's interview is with Dr. Sharon Livingston, who is a who has her PhD in clinical psychology. She specializes currently in emotional eating disorders. She has a website, emotionaleatingsecrets.com. She's done extensive research in the field for Weight Watchers, Atkins, South Beach, Kraft, as far as dietary preferences and emotional eating. So she's quite an interesting person to speak with. I wanted her on my podcast because I thought I heard her on a different podcast and she was quite interesting. And, you know, I have to admit that since I started this plant-based journey in my office and trying to educate people, I have a difficult time at times getting my message across. Sometimes I'm too passionate about my views on plant-based eating. Sometimes I get frustrated when people can't see the light and they'd maybe rather have medicines or surgeries versus even changing a little bit about their diet. I also have trouble reaching people and figuring out what's the best way to approach people without placing blame or making people feel bad. And getting them to want to educate themselves. So, you know, I have a tremendous amount to learn in this field of nutrition from an emotional standpoint. You know, there's nothing more emotional than what we eat, and, you know, it's tied to where we came from, our relatives, what we did growing up, our heritage. You know, there's so many things, so many factors, our friends now, our friends, you know, what they think of us. So it's very difficult to approach, especially in an office setting in a short amount of time, all these avenues. So I have a limited amount of time to approach people, and I certainly don't want to turn people off. I want to educate people as much as I can so that they can make their own decision, and I respect them for whatever decision they make. But I also want my point to come across and them to feel like they, you know, they have the ability to make their own decision. But a very educated decision. So, you know, I think you'll enjoy hearing some of her her views on nutrition and the approach to perhaps eating disorders and what drives people to make food choices. And, you know, maybe you can apply some of these to your own life and instances that when I heard her interviewed with Howard Jacobson, who I interviewed earlier, you know, he talked about his love of chocolate and, you know, what drives him to eat chocolate. So I think it can be very interesting to kind of look about your own life, what drives your certain nutritional interest and how you go about eating. So enjoy the interview. Welcome, Dr. Sharon Livingston. Doctor,
thank you.
You're welcome. Good afternoon. You are quite accomplished in the field of humanistic psychology. You've done a lot of interviews with regard to the psychological aspects of eating with Weight Watchers, Atkins, South Beach, and a whole host of other industries. And you've seen and heard it all. I actually heard you interviewed with Howard Jacobson, and I thought it'd be fantastic to have a chat with you concerning life here in South Florida and a plant-based cardiologist. So welcome.
Well, thank you very much, and I think it's fabulous that that's what you do. It's very exciting to me.
Dr. Livingston, I'll start with a few, throw out a few things that happened to me, and then maybe you can help me along. You know, as a cardiologist, it's more of a consultative
practice, and so people will be referred to me, whether they have chest pain, diabetes, hypertension, all the above, on a bunch of medications. Is there something wrong? Should we do something else? And they come in, and often I see, again, the significantly overweight patient, often are becoming more and more young. They used to be more in their 70s, 80s. Now they're in 40s and 50s. They're on a whole host of blood pressure medicines, diabetic medicines that have been added and added and added. They don't feel well. They really don't know what to do. They've probably tried a bunch of different diet-type interventions, but nothing has really worked. And oftentimes I'll just push back my chair and say, you know what, there's a better way around this. You know, I believe in a plant-based medicine approach. And then I'll start my spiel about, you know, this is what it involves. This is what, and I've changed it to what you can have as opposed to starting with what you can't have.
Makes sense. Good.
And, I've changed it to, you know, again, to make sure this is not something, it's not your fault. It's, we've all grown up on this standard American diet that has gotten progressively more processed. I grew up in West Virginia, you know, eating lard and fruit in a pie with tons of sugar. So I know where you're coming from. It's not easy, but you can change. Then that's followed by the patient looking at me like, you know, first they think, well, you know, I was just really here to get my cholesterol medicine titrated or to see whether I needed a stress test. And, you know, I really don't, I like my meat. Or it won't work. And, you know, the pushback. So what would be your initial approach to somebody that came in that you're going to kind of surprise with this?
So, well, first of all, I probably wouldn't surprise them myself. I would say, well, well, you know, you're here and, you know, I can help you with medication. I'm wondering, you know, what you think about this whole situation and what you might like to accomplish. I would ask them what their goal is.
Very good. Yeah, that's a great approach. I don't give people the idea to give me their idea. I guess I tell them what I do the motherly approach of this is what you need to do. So yeah, that's very good.
And we might find out that they don't have a goal and not at this time. And I'm wondering, you know, if there are some ways to, you know, help them feel safe with you, because a little bit is like going to the principal, you know, like the teacher sent you to the principal because, you know, the problem was larger than the teacher could handle. So they've got to go see the cardiologist. Like, oh my God, I'm really in trouble. And they're probably very defensive. And they need to feel safe enough to even consider what you have to offer. And so you need to, I would want to make them feel like they can talk to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to applaud you because how many cardiologists take that much time? I mean, they don't. So bravo to you.
Well, thank you. You know, it's become a passion for me. As we talked a little bit earlier, I grew up with very sick grandparents that died at an early age. They were very close to me. I grew up also in a family of teachers, and I was always told that if the student doesn't learn, it's because of the teacher, not because of the student.
Right. Right.
And so it bothers me if I can't get people to understand. And it also bothers me that if I so strongly believe in this, I at least need them to understand so that they can make an informed decision whether to do it or not.
So I'm wondering, do you have things all over your office that kind of show, you know, your interest in a plant-based diet?
Yes. You know, we have the cookbooks in the office. We have some pamphlets up and around. I started all this, I became a marathon runner. So I actually frame my finishers, T-shirts, and medals from the various locations. I kind of travel to do it. So I've always displayed those as an idea that, okay, if I'm going to walk the walk, here it is. So, you know, I do run the marathons. Here's proof that I did it. And so, you know, I do believe in exercise. I do believe in this, you know, and you know, so we try to have things around. My staff it's a united front as far as, you know, my nurse may come in and kind of preempt things and say, you know, Dr. Delaney really believes in a plant-based diet, and she's going to talk to you a little bit about this as an option. So, you know, we try to, you know, and it's becoming more. The longer that I do it, the more people probably have heard of it. Now, you know, some referring physicians are starting to say, you know, oh, by the way, she's plant-based. She can talk to you about dietary changes as well. So that does help.
Can I ask you a really crazy thing? This is going to sound totally crazy.
Certainly.
What about, have you considered possibly having samples of something plant-based and yummy for them to try?
Well, we are doing that in our, you know, the nutrition classes. But yes, that I had thought about putting, you know, a green juice or something like that around. But yeah, that would probably be a good idea too, just to put in the office some energy bar that was wholesome and low sugar. And you know, when I first started, you know, we had a bowl of fruit and coffee and biscotti, and the fruit went rotten, and the biscotti went away quickly. So I was like, okay, that's got to go. So that was pre plant based. So we don't, you know. So but yes, I think that would be an excellent idea.
And, you know, maybe if there were, you know how they, when you're selling your house, they tell you to make popcorn. So the smell of the popcorn you know, put apples in the oven. So you smell the delicious scent of the apple and cinnamon. And I'm wondering if we could possibly, you know, subliminally just start enticing them, having things that are wafting into their awareness so that they might consider something different. Like, oh, what is that? That smells fabulous. I'm trying to think of ways to entice them so that they don't. I know, you know, and I'm not overweight, but I would walk into your office and I would see all of that. I could possibly feel intimidated or, oh, I could never be that good. Or especially some of these people are at least 100 pounds overweight, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And what's the mode? What do you normally see the people who are coming into you?
You know, I mean, it's a combination, but they're usually overweight, high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, chest pain, you know, it could be heart failure, you know, diabetic.
But what do they look like?
You know, they're overweight, typically not walking, real spry. You know, may have a cane, may not have a cane, certainly have a limp. We have stairs. Most people take the elevator. Some of people are out of breath by the time they get, you know, back into the room, even if they've taken the elevator.
So we really need to figure out how to encourage them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe find out, you know, if there are alternatives. Like, you're starting something new here. You're seeing a new kind of doctor. And I have heart for your condition. You know, I really do. It's not accidental that you became a cardiologist, right? This is something you do have passion for, and you do love the concept of health from this perspective, from this whole, you know, it's like you can't help but be heartfelt. You can't help it. I mean, it's part of who you are. And we need to get them to really talk about their emotional pain about it, right?
Yes. There was a patient the other week. I see both he and his wife. He is morbidly obese. She is significantly overweight. She's had probably more serious conditions, but he's got more probably total body failure. And I saw in him, I talked to her. She struggles with it, trying to, you know, what I say, stay on the wagon and eat plant-based and try to walk. But the whole family is overweight. They like to get together for barbecues. And I think eating is a whole thing around their whole social interaction. And he does the cooking. So, you know, I do think there's some, you know, he's trying to take care of her, yet he's, you know, cooking maybe not the right things or doesn't know how to cook the right things. And he tries to control his own weight by, he told me, you know, I always go through, you know, I always kind of start, well, what'd you have for dinner last night? And, you know, we work way back because I like to see what people's interests are, what they like, you know, what they like to eat. I'm certainly not going to, you know, try to throw broccoli at somebody that's never ate anything green or something. But, you know, what did you have for dinner? And what, you know, let's go through your day. And he's, you know, he tells me, well, he usually doesn't eat during the day. He fasts all day. And it's like,
oh,
well,
my goodness.
You know, I said, you're a really big guy. He was, you know, over 300 pounds. And I said, you know, you have to be, and he works. And I said, you'd have to be starving when you come home. And, you know, he didn't really answer. And I said, let me tell you what I've eaten today. And I'm already hungry. You know, it's like 4 o'clock now. And I was like, I'm getting hungry again. You know, it's like, so you must just not be able to, I said, I would just eat all evening long if I starve myself like that during the day. But, you know, and I said, so what did you have like after dinner? And he's like, well, a protein bar. And he's like, well, come on, you know, I said, there's more to it than that. And, you know, and I tried to, you know, go through things and I started to see where that was his way of trying to control or do this moderation thing, you know, to have some control. You know, he was spinning out of control. He would control it all day long and then lose it in the evening.
Right. He'd hold his breath.
Yes.
Oh, poor guy.
And
poor
guy. And just the nicest people that you ever wanted to meet. And you know, even the, you know, the children who are probably in their 20s are overweight, the grandchildren are now overweight, you know, that are little tiny kids, you know, so this whole process, and I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of guilt with, okay, this is how we raise, you know, this is how we live, you know, but we're in this vicious circle. How do we get out of it?
So one of the things that I do with people come to me with, different amounts of weight to lose. And there have been some really funny stories. There was a young woman who came to me who was not particularly overweight, you know, maybe it was 10 pounds, but she could not stand what she was doing to herself. And she would get up in the middle of the night and she would eat anything that was in the refrigerator, anything. And we talked and talked and talked. She once ate dog food. It was in the refrigerator. She ate it. And it turned out that she was very lonely at night. She was living by herself, and she was lonely. She didn't want to go back and live with her parents, but she felt lonely. And it turned out that the only place she felt really comfortable was on her yoga mat. And I said, what would happen if you took your yoga mat to bed? And so she did. She started sleeping with her yoga mat and she stopped the middle of the night eating. So sometimes, you know, what's driving it, what's going on is something that you might not even think. And there's an easy solution that you wouldn't even think about. Another person needed a teddy bear from her mother. She had to call her mother and ask her to send her teddy bear. And she stopped her process. So sometimes to ask the person, so what are your problem foods? So Jamie, tell me, when could you be a specific patient just for fun? You can make the patient up if you want.
Sure,
so
yeah, know. Sure, yeah, sure, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so just give me a little background because I can't see you, new patient.
Oh, okay, you know. 50-some-year-old, you know, high blood pressure, do have a good job, but can't seem to get the weight off, have now starting to have things are starting to fall off, had a little skin cancer removed, now the doctor wants to add cholesterol medicine, had an ultrasound, thought they saw some plaque in my carotids, really don't want any of this. Here I am.
So, well, I'm so happy you made it here because I want to tell you something. I know this is probably not something you've heard before, but a lot of what we're talking about is reversible.
Well, that's good to hear.
And I'm wondering how you think that might be.
Well, I guess I really don't want to take medication if I can help it. But I really don't want to get sick either. So, you know, I'm trying to exercise. I hurt my foot, and that's been a problem, so I can't walk as much as I'd like.
Oh, I hate that.
So, You know, and I tried to follow a couple different dietary plans, and I've lost weight, and then it kind of gradually goes back up. My husband's not really on board with it. I mean, he's supportive and everything, but not really, you know, interested in changing the way he eats that much.
So you would have to, if you were going to change your diet, you'd have to prepare differently for you than you do for him?
Yes, probably. He would probably prepare his own food to some extent, help out a little bit. But yeah, I'd have to probably end up doing two meals, and we'd have
Have you ever had success in changing your food habits in a way that you were happy with?
I had, I felt pretty good when, I tried to cut out sugar, simple sugars and things, and ate more plants. I did pretty good then. And then, you go to a birthday party and, you have a piece of cake, and then, it's Christmas time, and then one thing leads to another. And, before you know it, you kind of slip back into your old ways.
So what's your food that really calls to you, that gets you in trouble?
I'd have to say sweets, probably.
Sweet, a particular sweet?
Cookies tend to be the, where I probably, fall into it, because I think I can limit those a little bit. So, allow myself a couple cookies here and there.
What kind?
I don't think it matters so much.
I'll bet you have a favorite cookie. I'll bet you do.
Yeah, well, okay, if it's store-bought, it would be an Oreo. And then I have a favorite. Growing up, as far as Christmas, my grandmother was a big baker, so I'd probably, she made these raisin-filled cookies that were really, really good. So those, it's very hard for me to resist. Uh-oh, you may have lost
me. There you are.
You're asking me what my favorite cookie was. It was between the Oreo, store-bought Oreo, a raisin-filled cookie, and then the chocolate chip cookie always works.
Okay, so, it's so interesting. I did a huge amount of research on chocolate chip cookies. I know everything about chocolate chip cookies you can imagine. Okay, so when is it that you want that cookie in a typical day?
Two times, either in the morning with a cup of coffee. I'd just assume have that. And, I'll take that back to when I was a kid. I kind of was queasy in the morning, so I kind of conned my mother into, let me have sweets for breakfast. And then I guess after dinner, I kind of start searching around for that cookie, that dessert.
Okay, so if you could have, let's say it's a morning occasion, and you could have the ideal cookie, what would that ideal cookie be?
Oh, it would be that raisin-filled cookie.
That your grandma made?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, how could you possibly get that at this time?
Well, I've learned to make them myself. I certainly don't do it on, it seems like a one time of year type of Christmas baking for me as far as that kind of cookie, but there's a certain, if I go back to that hometown on occasion, I typically will get that cookie that they, a bakery there in the little town that I grew up in still has those. So I will pick those up just about every time I go into that town.
Okay. So here it's a morning. You are really jonesing for that cookie. And what I want you to do, if I had my druthers, is only have that cookie. You can have it, but you have to have that cookie. How could you make that happen?
I'd have to plan in advance and make that cookie. And it's, it's not something quick, because I couldn't get it locally. So that would be,
Are they freezable? Can you keep them in the freezer?
Probably, yeah, sure, absolutely.
So I would like you to possibly consider creating a batch of those cookies to always have on hand. So if you really, really, really want that cookie, you can have it. But no other cookie, just that one.
Okay.
Our dogs are taking turns now.
Yeah.
But before you go to the freezer to take that cookie out, I want you to tell me a memory about that cookie from when you were little.
Oh, I guess I would just the fond memories of being at my grandmother's house where it always smelled good because she was a fabulous cook and baker, and there would always be these cookies in a little Tupperware container on the end of the counter. So that would be, you know, the good memories I have of her and growing up there in the, you know, the country and being, you know, in that environment.
So besides actually eating the cookie and smelling the smells, what were you doing?
Sitting, talking to her.
What would you talk about?
I don't know that there would be anything in particular. I guess I don't have much in the way of memories of, you know, what the conversation was. It would just be a general conversation.
And what was it like to be with her?
Very peaceful.
Peaceful.
Yes.
So might it be possible that you could find someone? I'm assuming since you're all grown up that maybe, is she still around?
No.
Right. Is there anyone that you know that might give you some of the same feeling that you got from Grandma?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Daughter, you know, boyfriend, mother. My mother actually lives with me. So, you know, she has her own little apartment suite here. But, yeah, there's various people that I could, friends, you know. Yeah, sure.
And so if you needed that calm feeling, what might it be like before you have that cookie just to go and spend some time, you know, with your mom or with one of these other people and have a chat?
It'd be good if we didn't all go down the cookie road and say, oh, yeah, those cookies sound good. Let's all have one.
So the cookie is just the punctuation.
Yes.
It's not really about the cookie. It's about Grandma and how you felt nice and calm there. And I'm wondering if you could just pause enough time to have that conversation with, you know, with a grandma-ish conversation without the cookie. How might that be? What do you think that would be like?
Oh, I think it would be potentially, I hate to use the word distracting, but I guess calming enough that you would forget that you really wanted the cookie.
And so, and then if you really still want the cookie, you have them in the freezer and you could take one. How many would you need? If you have this ideal cookie there, how many would you need to eat?
Oh, just one.
And how would that be in terms of what you think is okay for you or not?
Oh, I think it would be okay as long as it was a once in a while thing and not an everyday thing.
Well, what if it was one cookie whenever you wanted it? And only if you went through the other part first, which is to just pause for a few seconds and think about, gosh, do I need some calming and who could I get that from or how could I get that? What are some other ways I get calm?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that would be fine.
So the only thing that's hard is taking a breath and counting to five and asking yourself that question. It's intervening between the moment that you're going automatically to the cookie or to a fake cookie, you know, maybe you don't have those cookies, you know, because you haven't prepared for yourself and you take a, you know, an alternative that's not even that satisfying. And then you need more of them if you're like most people because you didn't get the real cookie you wanted.
And would you apply that to someone that maybe they're really not looking for? They're looking for something, but they haven't really taken time to figure out what it is that they're looking for so that they continue to eat different things.
Well, we'll try that with different things that you're working with. So, you know, so so interesting. I was brought up with bagels, you know, New York bagels.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother worked in a bagel store. And they had the best bagels you ever tasted in your whole life. I mean, they had just the right amount of chew, and the texture was just right. They weren't too crunchy. They were soft. I liked it soft. And she'd bring them home hot. They were hot. And the smell of it and the taste of it. And I have not had a bagel since I went through that same thing I just did with you myself. And I imagined, I don't want just any bagel. I want a really good bagel. You know, I want my mother's bagel. That means I have to go all the way down to New York, and I live in New Hampshire, to get this bagel. And then I thought, well, there must be some near here. So I thought about everything I could do to get the perfect bagel, because they probably have them in Boston. I live in New Hampshire. Boston's not far. It's only 45 minutes to an hour. Maybe I could make a trip to Boston to get that bagel. Well, by the time I've gone through this whole thing, I realize that I'm no longer craving the bagel. So when you think about all the steps you have to go through to get the ideal food, something changes, and I don't know exactly how it happens, but it changes. And it doesn't mean you're not going to have some of that, but you can think through, well, how much do I really want? What would make it perfect? And have it, but have the perfect cookie, have the perfect bagel, have the perfect piece of pizza, have the perfect potato. I'm laughing right now. There was a time where I totally gave up potatoes, and I had given up starch totally. And my husband and I were at a restaurant. It was a Thai restaurant, and he ordered a dish. It was a chicken dish. And I asked if I could have a bite, and he gave me a bite. And, oh, my God, this was a rotten piece of chicken. It was awful. It was mealy and gross and disgusting and it must have been spoiled. I couldn't imagine what it was. It wasn't a piece of chicken. It was a potato. I discovered I didn't like potatoes. And I had given them up with, like, you know, sadness and, you know, oh, gosh, I'm never going to have a potato again. And I discovered I don't even like potatoes. Isn't that strange?
Yes.
And so I guess what I'm saying is sometimes I think we have an imagination about these things that we have to have because they're tied to something else. So my bagel was tied to being with my mom. You know, the cookie that your patient talked about was her grandma. And there are ways that we can get the feelings and the comfort. You know, it might be comfort. It might be, you know, the excitement of a party. There are ways that we can figure out what it represents and work towards getting those. And if you still really want to have the cookie or the bagel, to make sure you get the best one. You know, don't skimp on yourself. Get the best one. And you'll find that you'll do that less and less and less. And that just happens naturally. And you need to be committed to thinking about yourself and really being present for yourself to do it. And that's one of the blessings of thinking about the emotions involved with your eating. And also, these are natural ways that we've comforted ourselves over the years that we were taught, you know? You know, you stick a bottle in the baby's mouth. You know, a lot of us got that as we were growing up. Or, you know, you were good, you got ice cream. And so we associate reward with these different things that actually don't necessarily make us feel so good. And what if we could relearn that?
Well, yeah, I think that's it comes up with family. You know, patients will say, well, you know, I gained a bunch of weight because my grandkids were in town and we had to go out and they wanted pizza and they wanted all this and they wanted McDonald's and they wanted all this. And it's like, well, why? You know, sometimes I'll be just blunt. And it's like, well, why are you trying to kill them? You know, it's what? Why, you know, why, you know, do you need that? And my father was, you know, my father was the same way with my daughter. You know, he would pick her up from school and he was pretty sure she would starve to death if she didn't have a snack from him, you know, on the 2 mile ride home. You know, and he would, you know, tell my mother he wanted a snack to bring to her. And it was this, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, I'll take it back to my grandmother, that there was always something when you came in the door. It was her way of nurturing was through food. And, you know, so it just became, you know, this whole family was to get together and eat. It was always about eating. Which is interesting now because as I sit here and I'm thinking as I talk about it, they weren't very touchy-feely people to start mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was in lieu of a hug, we'll give you a piece of pie.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's pretty interesting. You know, I'm sitting here, it's like the bell finally went on because I'm thinking, you know, it's like this, you know, it was always get together and eat, you know, and all this stuff. And you were full and, you know, that was a happy feeling. You were, you know, everybody was happy together. And I guess they weren't that happy when they weren't eating.
So imagine everybody getting together for Thanksgiving and there's nothing on the table. There's no food. What would people do?
I posed that question on Facebook. I actually did. I posed the question, not quite that, but I said, what happens? You know, is it about the food or is it about the people you were with? So as far as, you know, like not having a turkey on Thanksgiving, I was trying to say, you know, if you didn't have a turkey when your family came over, what would be the response? And I was shocked to find out how many people basically said, one, they wouldn't come. They wouldn't, if they did come, they wouldn't be very happy. It wouldn't be a good time. And I actually argue with some people, some friends over the whole situation. It's like, it's not about the food. It's about your memory of it. It's right. about your, the memories that you have when you're with other people. Well, no, we, right. It's, you know, and I mean, it kept going back to, no, it's the memories you have eating the food. And it's like, no, you know, cause I, but it was amazing. I was shocked at the answers that I received because, you know, I thought if I can be, you know, to me, if I could be with my family, I really don't care if there's a bird on the table. I could care less what we had. But
I mean, what if we could be in the living room and playing a game where it was something about getting to know each other all over again? I mean, but we don't. We sit around the Thanksgiving table, and everyone has a role that they choose to play at it. And did you ever notice that like, people will be talking, and they'll be moving their food around. They'll be picking something up. They're shoving down a comment not to say it by putting, you know, a bite in their mouth. There's all kinds of dynamics that happen in the room where they use the food and the plates and their job. You know, whatever that is, are you the one who puts the stuff on the table? Are you the one who helps clean up? Or are you the one who, you know, does this or that with regard to the food so that they're not really communicating? It's not about communicating. It's about, well, we want to be together, but we don't know how to be.
And as long as we keep eating, we'll still stay together and it'll be okay.
Right. But it's not okay. They go home and they feel gross, you know, they feel sick to their stomachs because they overindulged. You know, and they're walking out with the bags of food that, you know, grandma says, take it home, take it home, take it home. And you're going, oh, please, I already overindulged and I feel awful. I was doing a webinar last night, and when I do a webinar, I actually have a pretend table on the screen, and I have people choose their seats around the table so they can see the screen. And I put a bottle of Pepto-Bismol on the table last night because it was Passover and Easter, so everybody was overeating. And so I asked anybody who needed the Pepto-Bismol. They all said that they did well with it, so I was happy about it.
Yeah, and I guess, and so to turn the course, I mean, that is extremely interesting and, you know, brings a whole new dynamics, you know, to light. And of course, it makes it, you know, I mean, obviously it's much more complicated than, you know, well, here's the cure for heart disease, just eat plants, see you later. And all it's like, oh, that's it. Thank you so much, you know, and we're on our merry way. But because I'm always so frustrated, it's like, you know, explain all this. And it's the way that you don't have to be a victim anymore. You can actually take control of your disease. You can reverse this disease. You can get better. You can feel better. You don't need this surgery. And I'm expecting people, it's like, oh, my God, thank you so much for telling me this. But it's really like, well, at the end of the conversation, it's, well, what are you going to do to me? And, you know, so... obviously, it takes a lot more time than just
right. They have to. They really need therapy. I mean, they need to be talking about this and working it through. And when I say therapy, I mean that kind of loosely. They need someone to listen to them, help them create goals that they want, and see what the obstacles are and work them through. I think what you're offering is a blessing. It's an incredible blessing because we know they can reverse all of this. It's reversible, you know, for most people. And do they want to? I mean, that must be so hard for you because it's clear that some people don't want to. You know, they'd rather be uncomfortable in pain and die. I mean, like my, you know, cousin, my cousin's husband who did that because it was too painful. The food was more important.
And then there's, I think there is a perception sometimes that I'm you know, I'm really too far gone. And, you know,
right.
At this stage in my life, I may as well just be happy. And
whoa, right? What kind of happiness is that?
Yes. Yeah. It's like, well, you're, you know, you're not happy. That's the problem, you know?
Right.
And then, okay, how about the other side of the coin? You know, you have... you have a patient, say it's the husband, and okay, he's all in on this, you know, terrible heart disease, had the bypass, had the angioplasty, the blood vessels are all blocked off, and it's like, okay, hey, you know, this, you're really going to have to get on board, you know, overweight. You're going to have, if you do this, you got a chance. If you don't do this, you know, we got problems, and it's just going to be more medicines, more medicines, more medicines, and it's not going to be a very good quality. Okay, I'm on board, so I'm going to try. The spouse, not interested. I like my meat and potatoes. You can do what you want. I still like to go out, so we're going to have to go, you know, we're going to have to find a place to go out, but I have no interest in changing.
So, I mean,
and otherwise, on the surface, the relationship is good. You know, there's no, you know, that they like being around each other, at least, you know, what it appears to me. And supportive as far as, you know, I'll come sit in the waiting room when you're having your angioplasty, but I'm not going to eat plants.
Oh no.
Yes, this is a true story. The names have been withheld.
I know, I get it. I mean, it's ridiculous, right?
And both are intelligent people, so it's not like there's a lack of insight. There is a lack of insight, but there's not like there's a lack of the ability to understand that this way of eating will be beneficial. Even when the one person actually does it on his own to some extent, loses the weight, and the other person actually gets bigger because they're almost going the other direction, like, I'm not going to do this. So the other person gets unhealthier eating their persistent meat and potato lifestyle while the other person is going the other direction and trying, you know, but again, you know, not completely successful because they're, you know, he's trying to meet her in the middle a little bit as far as, you know, we'll eat some bread, we'll eat the pasta, we'll share this, we can share this part of our Italian heritage together, the bread and the pasta.
Right. And so how to get people to get back in touch with the other aspects of their culture, of what was love when they were little, or to realize that, you know, love comes in many different shades and forms, and there are ways to have that, and a little bit of the food, a little bit of the food. It doesn't mean you have to give up everything. You know, my parents were caterers, and my mother figured out how to make vegetables taste good. You know, she figured it out.
Well, this person will actually do some cooking and help out, but she's not going to eat it.
So, I mean, that has to be her choice. But so when she's watching him doing better, it just makes her want to, she just gets rebellious and gets fatter.
It seems that way. Her health has declined. She's become more overweight, more back, and you know, maybe there's a psychological
dynamic going on for sure.
You know, who gets the most attention? You know, is there more attention when you're sick than, you know, I mean, you know, I'm part Italian and part Irish, and you know, certainly, you know, we always tell my mom, you know, you can lay the guilt trip down pretty good, you know, as far as. there's three generations, my mom, my daughter, and myself, you know, and when we're together at Christmas time, you know, we can play the game. It's like, who can do it best, so to speak. but maybe there's that aspect of it that, you know, it's a little bit of a, we're not getting the attention. They don't have children. So if you're, you know what I mean? Who gets the most, you know, a way of attention? I don't know.
Right. Right. So it's all of that. And the question then becomes, how do I invite these people to be loving to themselves? Because it's about love. Food is love. So how do we get them to find other sources of love that'll be much more satisfying, much more rewarding, that you don't have to suffer from? Love shouldn't make you suffer. And overeating does. So... And I mean, isn't that a wonderful thing about a plant-based diet, is that it's much harder to overeat on a plant-based diet.
Yeah, I think that's why it's so successful, is that, you know, that was going to be, you know, my next is that, you know, people that truly have some strong food addictions, when they become plant-based, they drop hundreds of pounds, they feel good about themselves, and you're still able to eat a tremendous amount of food. So there's that satisfaction of, I can still eat. I don't have to deny myself. I don't have to starve myself. I can, you know, I really, you know, maybe I am overeating, but I'm, you know, you can overeat on lettuce a lot to you know, before you get into trouble. You can overeat on vegetables a lot before you get into trouble, especially if you're not adding any oil and salt and sugar and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, you know, I do think in some respects, I think, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Goldhammer and Doug Lyle. Dr. Lyle, he's a psychologist, and he wrote a book called The Pleasure Trap. You know, talking about salt, salt, sugar, and fat. And people want pleasure and they want comfort. And if it's not going to be pleasurable, then, you know, you have to have some pleasure in order to change.
So, you know, it's so interesting. So we had this new puppy, and he's 5.5 months old. He's 30 pounds, and he is extremely energetic. And this poor guy, there's something going on with his GI system. I don't know what it is. We got rid of all of his worms and whatever parasites he had, and he still has trouble. So my naturopath said, you got to make him organic chicken and white rice. And put some colostrum in it and some other stuff. Anyway, so now I'm not 100% vegan, but I'm probably 95%. And I just boiled this organic chicken, white meat chicken. And it's really funny. He's like my child. So what he eats, there's something about it. I want to eat it. Like I'm tempted to eat dog food, but you know, it's all organic, blah, 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 blah. So I took a little piece of this chicken and I ate it. I could taste the salt in this plain chicken. I put no salt in the water, nothing, but I could taste the flavor because I don't use salt. I don't use salt. I don't use sugar. And there is natural flavor in food. I couldn't believe it. The chicken had I could taste the salt. So once I know you know this. So I'm preaching to the choir, I know. But the natural taste of foods are wonderful. We ruin our taste buds by, you know, all this artificial stuff that we throw on top. But all you need to do is be away from it for a little bit of time, and your taste buds come back, which is really quite remarkable. Like, I don't put dressing on salad.
Yeah, like you say, it's all habit and things we think we need.
Right.
Yeah, and then after, you know, and I did, you know, I mean, I actually the raisin cookie part of the story was mine.
I know.
And but I played the role too good, right? He's like, you're not that good. But, you know, the thing that you think you need, sweet tooth, but as I went plant-based and the more natural foods and the more of the other stuff that I just got down to, the sweet tooth went away.
Right.
You know, really, I don't crave it anymore. Or I don't, you know, I don't get that, you know, like you say, fruit. Well, it's more than enough satisfying for me. I used to be an ice cream, you know, person that, you know, I knew every Dairy Queen from here to, you know, Florida to West Virginia, basically when we were driving, you know, but, you know, I don't want it anymore. And I also, it's like when you exercise and like, you don't want to go up and you don't want to go for a run and then you come back and you feel so good. And it's like,
right.
Boy, if I could just feel that way before the run as I did after, then
right.
Everybody would exercise. And it's the same way with food. If you could convince people how good they would feel on a plant-based diet once they get rid of the other stuff and they could taste it and they don't feel bad after they eat, then they would be more likely to do it. But it's so hard to convince them to get to that first step.
You know, I'm sure you saw Super Size Me, the McDonald's story.
Yes.
And how it was originally it was nauseating to him to eat all that stuff. And then he got used to it. And then it was hard to get off of it. But he had to get through feeling sick to eat it. Because he was living with a plant-based woman, right? She was a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And he was eating vegan and he went to eating, you know, hamburgers and french fries and shakes. I can't even imagine what that must have, you know, his first meal, how he must have felt afterwards. He must have felt awful.
We of course made the joke, you know, we've made the joke, you know, it's like, well, you know, maybe if I gained 200 pounds and then lost it, I could write a book and then people would believe me that it was good, you know, and it's like, but I don't think I couldn't go back to eating that, you know, I can't even tell this, you know, you get on the elevator in the morning at the hospital and people have McDonald's bags and I almost get sick.
Right. You know? It smells bad.
It smells bad, you know, so it's like, I have to eat an awful lot of lettuce to gain 200 pounds. I don't know if I could do it.
Right.
But anyway, so... you have to get over that. And so it's just that, I guess, the detox. And I think that's why the True North and the Dr. Goldhammer, and that's exactly what they do, is they reset people's palate.
Right.
And so, you know, that's certainly an effective means to do it if you can just get people to try.
I have to say, you are just really my hero in what you're doing. I think it's wonderful. And, you know, if they were lucky enough to walk into your office and not know you were plant-based, wow, what a gift. It's like, you know, they stepped into another dimension. And how fabulous. How fabulous.
Well, thank you very much. I would feel better about it if I was maybe more successful, but I'm passionate and I'm keeping, you know, I'm trying, and I do think, you know, that through this podcast, you know, there are listeners and they are hearing, you know, because one of the reasons why I started the podcast were, you know, all the people that are talking, it's like, well, my doctor never, you know, doctors aren't trained in nutrition and nobody ever wants to take the time to talk to people about this. And it's like, you know, no, I do. And I have to get the word out there that, yeah, there is somebody out there that will listen. And I hope that by doing this, more of my colleagues will say, hey, you know, this is a good way to be. This, you know, it's so much rewarding. I spoke with Dr. This is such a rewarding way to practice. Even though the successes are small and, you know, very gradual, there's such a good feeling knowing that you gave it your best and you shared with something that can really help people as opposed to just patching people up.
Right. Absolutely.
And I certainly, you know, this was an enlightening conversation. I hope to be able to have more with you.
I'd love it. It'd be great fun.
Maybe we'll check back in after I put the good smelling vegetable. I have an Instapot that's an electric pressure cooker, and I thought about bringing, you know, like some stews and things in, but that would be the smell that I may go for, is, you know, some good soup that's smelling on the counter that they could have a little taste of. So that might be what we'll try. And so I'll try to implement a few of these things and I'll get back with you. How about that?
I think that sounds fantastic. And, you know, and I want you to be easier on yourself because you're treating the body and you're treating the mind. And sometimes it takes a multimodal approach. So you're doing great. You're doing great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking time.
My pleasure.
All right. Good night.
Good night now.
Well, that was a very interesting chat, and I certainly learned a lot with Dr. Livingston. Her website is, again, emotionaleatingsecrets.com, and she does have a consultative practice, so you can get on the website and email her if you have some interest. There's so much more to our eating than just nutrition, but I think if we can become more mindful about what we're eating and when we're eating, you know, we can make a lot better choices. And again, you know, plant-based nutrition, you get all the nutrients you need. You can get the satisfaction of eating with your friends, making new dishes. So, you know, I think that the benefits are certainly there. So whether, you know, you do baby steps and plant-based until 6 or a couple days a week or just when you're at home or go all at once, I think it's certainly Every little step is going to help your health and help the planet and help the animals. So if you'd like to get in touch with me, again, you can find me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney @gmail.com. So maybe for next week, just try to be a little bit more mindful about what you're eating. Take a step back. Ask why. How much is this really necessary? What am I eating, and does it provide any great nutrition? How will this help my health? How will this help my planet? So maybe think about it a little bit more. Until then, run long and eat your vegetables.